Longhorn Nation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is the foot kicker. The kicker comes through.
We're back.
Welcome back to another episode of Fire Tom Herman, your completely level-headed and definitely not at all overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. I'm your host, Josh, and we've got another throwback episode for y'all as Tux is back to co-host another episode this season. And yeah, that's great news and all, but what's most important, we finally got a voicemail on our hot take line. Let's take a listen.
Hey, this is Zach from South Austin. And Texas is going to win out, and we're going to play Texas A&M in the Texas Bowl, and we're going to get our fucking teeth kicked in, and Tom Herman is going to be fired, and Texas is going to hire Willie Taggart. You heard it here first. I want my credit when this happens. Great podcast. Hook 'em Horns.
First off, thank you, Zach, from South Austin for being the first person to actually call in. We have received text messages. But you're the first one to leave us an actual voicemail. It was mostly notable not only because you're the first, but the funniest thing is Google Voice automatically transcribes everything you wrote, and it misheard you at the end when you quickly said, hook 'em horns. So when I was first opening Google Voice to take a look at this, it told me that you said, I want my credit when this happens. Great podcasts, fucking morons. So I was a little bit like, whoa, coming on strong, but... Thankfully, that's not what happened.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. I love that you're a part of this now. You're a part of the podcast, basically. I'm really excited to get more people actually putting in voicemails.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully, it won't feel too derivative from like the solid verbal with their reverb line that they do on Sundays. But I like the idea of being able to get the community more involved. So hopefully, this is something that we're able to regularly feature. But... I guess to sort of talk about what he said in there, I mean, I feel like I'd get some pretty bad whiplash this year going over this roller coaster that we've got for us to go from the highs of thinking that we could compete with LSU, who was apparently the number one team in the country, to the lows of this like going two and three over the last five games, to beating Baylor and Tech to win out to finish the regular season, and then getting our teeth kicked in by A&M. Be a lot of sort of back and forth whiplash. I think that might actually kill me to lose to A&M in blowout fashion.
Don't speak it into existence, first of all. Second of all, Herman usually doesn't get blown out. He'll make it competitive and he'll, you know, make it a one-score game late, but he isn't going to get blown out. But still, this is a complete hypothetical that would absolutely suck. If it actually happens, I'm going to blame you for it forever.
Yeah. Not me. That's blaming
no, no,
Zach.
No, 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 no.
Zach
doesn't
from
matter.
South Austin.
Doesn't matter. You've enabled Zach. This is your fault now.
No.
You own it.
Fine. Okay. You're off the hook, Zach. Lucky for you. But yeah, thank you, Zach, for calling in. Thank you for being the first one to leave us a voicemail. If you, in the future, other listeners who aren't just Zach, or if Zach wants to leave us another one, I mean, we're off to a good start here. You can give us a call on the Fire Tom Herman podcast hot take line. Our number is 512-655-9038. And for those of you who are awkward and don't want to talk to people, Zach from South Austin can attest, no one is going to answer the phone. It's going to kick you straight to voicemail, and there will be an annoying recording of my voice giving you basically the breakdown of what we're going to do with your voice, in addition to obviously putting you on the podcast. We're going to try and take as much metadata as possible and sell it for ad revenue. Not really, but you get the idea. Give us a call. We appreciate it. Can't wait to see what other hot takes you've got. But Tux, I got to say, this past weekend was quite a beating for me, not just for Texas, but also for CSU. Had a rivalry game that, once again, in typical Bobo fashion, we managed to lose, but really didn't start off my day well with how this offense looked.
Oh, and I agreed with you. I didn't have a second CFB team that disappointed me. It's more like my NFL team continues to just kick me in the balls every chance they get. I think I've mentioned this before, but I'm a Chicago Bears fan, unfortunately. And I already knew, oh my God, they're going to put us in prime time. This is going to be the biggest shit show I've been a part of. And you know what? It definitely was.
Was it so bad a shit show that you guys blew a 20-0 halftime lead? Because that's the kind of shit show my pro team went through.
Oh, I forget your... Oh, wait. The Broncos lost? I'm so sorry. I'm bringing this up now.
Yeah. I was not joking at halftime talking in our Discord when I said we're up 20-0. And I said, we will find a way to lose this game. And lo and behold, we found a way to lose this game.
That sounds a lot like Texas. We're going to find a way to lose this. And you know what? We did.
I mean, and for how hard we tried to lose that game, we led particularly late against Iowa State. There, everything seemed like and felt like it was a game where we were getting blown out. And exactly. The fact that we took the lead so late still just sort of blows my mind that we were even in a position. I was getting ready to make a joke on Twitter after we scored to take the lead. I was going to be like, yeah, touchdown's great, but too little, too late. We're already down by multiple scores. Oh, holy shit. We took the lead.
Yeah, you know what? We're experts at making games close. And, you know, this is true of all Tom Herman teams. They like to just make it as close as possible and then let the other team hang around or they themselves hang around. And this is the result. It's a whole bunch of close games where we're, you know, clenching our butts and hoping that we just hold on. And this is one of those times where we just could not.
Yeah, I mean, this last run of games, I believe every single game has been decided by less than one possession between the Oklahoma game all the way up until the Iowa State game. Every game has been decided by one possession, and three of those games have been resolved on last-second field goals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we are simultaneously, like, just a few plays away from going, like, 4-1, but also literally two plays away from being 0-5 over this stretch.
And you know what? Outside of the Kansas game, we really haven't looked competent on offense. And even then, Kansas is probably a worse defense than us. So that's the only reason that we look semi-decent. Now, part of that is obviously that we're missing Colin Johnson. But really, the team as a whole is extremely inconsistent. They aren't starting off well. They aren't making the big plays when they need to. And I don't know how you get out of this funk.
And the hardest part with this funk is it's not even just any one thing is going wrong. It seems like every game it's been something slightly different. This Iowa State game probably was a little bit more in line with what happened against Oklahoma offensively. But, I mean, other than the Kansas game, you had for the TCU game, we could move the ball, but Sam just couldn't stop turning the ball over, which is something that this offense, basically going back to Maryland last year, we really don't turn the ball over. And against TCU, for whatever reason, we just could not stop turning the ball over. Then you have the Kansas State game where suddenly the run game comes alive. I mean, Keontae Ingram has more than, what was it, like 150 yards rushing or something like that nearly?
Yeah.
But the rest of the offense isn't really vibing. So it's not like it's just been the same thing over and over and over and we're not adjusting overall. It's a different problem each week. And this week, obviously, we were lacking in our ability to get the run game going, and that came back to bite us really hard on the last two drives where we're trying to kill clock. And we refused to move away from the run game. And Tom Herman has always preached since he got here that we're going to be a power run team first. And when we don't, when we can't get the run game going, we struggle to really adjust, even though we have a quarterback who has shown that he can take over the game through the air. We hesitate to actually lean on the pass game more exclusively, even when the run game continues to struggle.
Yeah, and Noah, our other host, had a great point on Twitter earlier today where he was talking about how Texas is averaging more than a yard less per carry against opponents that they faced last year. And his idea was that perhaps Tom Herman's run game is too predictable. It's been figured out. And I don't know how that happens, considering that in this league, there are so many good rushing teams. There's so many good rushers right now that there's got to be other ways to make something happen. And you and I have been advocating for this, as you know, at least privately, but they need to get more motion involved, more misdirection, and use that to open up some of these running lanes. But they're unable to make anything happen.
Yeah, and the refusal to change is what really hurts. I mean, we talked about it in the wake of the LSU loss, where we got stuffed on the goal line on two separate drives. That is, like, even something for QB power, which was a staple of our just we will score, just put your head down and we're just going to power through and we are going to get the couple yards we need in this goal line type situation. Basically been clamoring for us to overhaul that QB power run game, and yet every single time we go to the QB power run, it's obviously telegraphed and we get almost nothing out of it.
Yeah, exactly. We used to be one of the most consistent teams last year at, like you said, just imposing our will. It didn't really matter what Texas was going to run last year. They were going to pick up 5 to 6 yards some way, right? And that consistency is nowhere to be found this year. And instead, we're relying on big plays to move the ball. But I think the reason that this Iowa State loss is so alarming is that, first of all, it was a slow start. Like, the offense literally did not know how to function almost. And then late in the game, Tom Herman, who's usually been extremely aggressive, he just kind of turtled on that last drive. And we haven't seen that here.
We've seen it, but not in that type of situation, not where it's a one-point game. We settled in last year several times to that sort of conservative turtling, basically, when we were up 3 scores. You and I jokingly referred to it as sort of our three-possession lead curse. But somehow it was like that got transferred to our game, only it was the you've scored on three possessions curse. So we finally got to 21 points and we were just like, all right, that's good. And refused to attack, despite the fact that what got us back into the game was being on the attack.
Exactly. Like, the only competent parts of this offense against Iowa State were Sam Ellinger, Devin Duvernay, and then Brennan Eagles in some moments, right? And it just doesn't make sense that, you know, that's not who you rely on. You know, we went with 2 runs and then a tunnel screen. What's that? That's too predictable, and you're not going to get anywhere. You might as well just have punted.
Yeah, I mean, I don't dislike the tunnel screen itself. I mean, especially when you are, because that is an instance where we were going to one of our best playmakers. Sam Ellinger just throws a tunnel screen to Devin Duvernay on one of the few things this year that is hung over from last year that has continued to be effective is those actual tunnel screens. Now, we've also started using more bubble screens than we did last year, but the tunnel screen has been a play that we've turned to in times of need to pick up chunk yardage, to convert on downs, convert on third down. So I feel like that itself was a safe play call that still felt pretty aggressive, just knowing the rate of success that we have with those tunnel screens, whether it's Lil Jordan Humphrey or Devin Duvernay catching it. But it was obviously, I can't tell if we are telegraphing these things, because, what was it, Iowa State's nose tackle was the one to get in the way?
Yeah.
I mean, he's effectively shuffled over the 5 to 10 yards from him being right in front of Zach Shackelford to getting in the way of a pass to the field side. So I can't tell if we're tipping our hand somehow, if the Houston Astros are sitting back there with their camera banging on a trash can to tell the Iowa State defense what's coming. But something like that has been so reliable, being that obviously predictable, when we hadn't even run a tunnel screen in this game to that point, is extremely worrying. You got to start looking where these tells are being picked up.
I think it would have been a perfect first down call, just because it would have broken a tendency and it would have put our players in a good position, right? On third down, though, when it's third and long like that, you can't. It's too easy to telegraph, I think. So that's my main problem with it. But really, I don't know why they're in a funk. You know, Larry Fedora was brought in to sort of break up these tendencies. You would have figured that Herman, who always preaches self-scouting, would be aware of some of these issues. And especially after having two bye weeks to correct these issues, we have nothing.
Yeah, nothing to show for. It feels a lot like the issues that we had in 2016 with the offense, where we kind of became a one-trick pony. And if we weren't doing that trick, things just weren't going anywhere. And it felt like, just like in 2016, we peaked with basically at the start of the season. Against Notre Dame in 2016, we thought we had a dynamic offense. It could make a ton of plays, could be explosive, had a reliable running back. And that's what we thought we got in the LSU game. You had Devin Duvernay making plays. You had Brandon Eagles making plays. You had Jake Smith making plays. You had so many guys making these explosive plays that we thought we had completely overhauled the offense. And the further we've gotten into the year, the more you go, it seems like we've really only got about 10 plays. And when it's that few plays that we can really rely on, it makes it really easy for every defense to key in. And that's, I mean, it's a repeat of what we saw. If we can't perform the one thing that we're most confident in, if we can't consistently get the ball to Devin Duvernay, or if we can't get Keyonte Ingram rolling, we're basically doomed.
And I would add Colin Johnson to that as well. If we can't target Johnson, Duvernay, or get Ingram going, this offense just sputters. And this is exacerbated by Colin Johnson being hurt, and that pretty much puts the entire load on Devin Duvernay to produce. And then on top of that, we haven't really seen guys like Jake Smith get a reception in three games now. Brennan Eagles is on and off. And then the other guys may as well not even exist. Like, no offense, but John Burt, you aren't doing much. Malcolm Epps is okay here and there, but again, he's not doing much. So you just have to wonder, going forward, where does the production come from? Where do they have room to improve, and how do they make it happen?
Yeah, and early on this year, even without Colin Johnson, a lot of us were excited about what we were seeing out of Brennan Eagles and out of Jake Smith. And seeing those types of things made us not nearly as concerned about the future. Devin Duvernay is going to be gone, but Jake Smith will be reliable. Or Colin Johnson is going to be gone, but Brennan Eagles is Colin Johnson, but faster. And we've seen the longer that Colin Johnson has been out, the more untrue that becomes, where we don't have that threat there. And I think it's making a lot of fans need to appreciate a lot more exactly what Colin Johnson offers to this offense. Yeah, he's not the fastest guy. He's not going to be your guy who's going to catch and run the ball 75 yards. But the threat that he poses pulls a lot of attention for opposing defenses. And we are able to take better advantage of guys like Brennan Eagles, Jake Smith, Devin Duvernay. But they are clearly, outside of Duvernay, are not prepared to be the focus of the offense or the focus for the defense. They're not able to find that space without Colin Johnson out there. I mean, it felt like there was more room in the passing game last week just by the fact that Colin Johnson was on the field at all. Never mind the benefit that he poses just by the playmaker that he is, especially on third downs, and making these acrobatic circus catches along the sidelines.
That's extremely well said. There's nothing much more to add. I really feel like the only way that they're going to get out of this funk is A, to hit the offseason, B, or perhaps, you know, just reach bowl practices so they can finally start making, or hopefully they can start making changes. B, if that doesn't happen, they need to upgrade the coaching staff. They need to basically hit the refresh button because it is just not working out. And then C, Herman more than likely is going to have to get out of his own way. By that I mean he has offensive talent on the roster. He has what looks to be a some decent depth pieces going forward too. He has what should be a very good coaching staff. You have guys like Larry Fedora just as analysts, you know, And then David Beatty eventually, hopefully, maybe, I don't know. And then you also have that coach from K-State, who I thought was pretty decent. So there is coaching talent as well, but there is no cohesion there. And that ultimately falls on Herman, and he needs to foster that. He needs to do that. So that is my plan going forward. As for the personnel, they need to make upgrades at tight end, possibly one of the guard spots, and they're going to have to replace Shaq, but that's it. The pieces are there, but they're not cohesive, and in the future, that is the goal.
Basically, it's going to take a lot of turnover, and I think, like a lot of these issues with the coaching staff, none of these things are really new. A lot of Texas fans have been clamoring for guys like Drew Maringer. Obviously, I've been screaming from the rooftops basically since he was hired for Derek Wareheim to get lost.
You have? I don't recall that.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm just dreaming that up. But none of these things are surprising. What's surprising, I guess, is just overall how the season has gone. This was supposed to be a season where it was, at least mentally for me, based on how last season went, the floor for acceptable in this regular season was to return to the Big 12 title game. That was the bare minimum for it to be considered a solid season. At least living up to my expectations was going back to the Big 12 title game. And while the door on that officially, mathematically, is not completely closed, with Baylor's only other game outside of us being Kansas, it's effectively closed. But we went from thinking for these guys that we were going to be able to sort of push these guys out the door and sell them to other programs as an upgrade. We're now back in this area where we have to just hope that Tom Herman is able to let go of these guys that he's sold to boosters, he's sold to the athletic department, he's sold to fans, he's sold to season ticket holders. He's sold these guys as integral to alignment. And now he has to turn around and effectively, to get rid of these guys, has to fire them. And I think what this is ultimately, the way I'm looking at it, is this becomes really a Chris Del Conte problem. What started off for him when we started the season, it was going to be a pretty easy offseason. You're going to be able to draw a lot of attention to the efforts to build the new basketball stadium, the efforts to close off the south end zone, and hopefully see continued growth by the football team, by the basketball team. You've got the baseball team getting started up. It was looking at this football offseason would be relatively easy. You're not going to have to do anything crazy, and everything this season is just going to support and show off the University of Texas. And with it going sideways like this, it becomes critical that if Tom Herman is unwilling initially to move on from these problem pieces on his staff, Chris Del Conte now has to be the one to push on that. And Del Conte is, to this point in his career, has not shown an unwillingness to do that. He's, even with how close he was with Gary Patterson, he was the one to sit Gary Patterson down and say, listen, you got to fix the offense. You can't keep doing this in the Big 12. And that's what led to the hiring of Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham to turn Trevon Boykin into a sudden Heisman contender. So now it's basically, if you don't have faith in Tom Herman to be willing to move on from guys that you think are his friends, whether it's Wareheim or it's Maringer or it's Stan Drayton or Todd Orlando or Tim Beck or whoever you individually have your qualms with on this staff, you have to believe that Chris Del Conte is not going to sit idly by and just hope that his head coach does something. It's going to become this could be the thing, despite all of the great things that Chris Del Conte has done to this point as the athletic director, this offseason could be one that defines his time as the AD at Texas if Tom Herman is resisting making adjustments to his staff.
Completely agreed. Now, we've been talking for about 20-something minutes now about the offensive struggles and failures and all that stuff. But we shouldn't let the special teams or the defense off the hook either. Neither of them were particularly great. Like, yeah, the defense only allowed 23 points, but they still had Buss. They still allowed so many yards. And I know we shouldn't be looking at yards as the final metric, but they couldn't get off the field at times. That last drive was just, well, it was cancer to look at. Come on.
Yeah, and I think the most frustrating thing is I remember at the start of the fourth quarter, or even maybe it was somewhere in the middle of the fourth quarter, they put up on the screen that we had only had three penalties to that point. And I thought to myself, wow, we have done an extremely good job of being disciplined in this game. I mean, typically, we have a lot of problems with penalties. And to that point, mid-fourth quarter, we had done an outstanding job of staying out of trouble and not giving away free yards. And that last drive was basically the team going, we are way off schedule. We need to catch up all at once at the worst possible time for penalties. I mean, we had, what was it, two pass interference penalties or a defensive holding. We were just handing out free yards for what should have been a difficult drive. I mean, we had these past 2 weeks, Kansas State and Iowa State, the defense, while not great, has played significantly better than they have the rest of this season, especially for that four-game stretch in between West Virginia and TCU.
Completely agreed.
Yeah, we have played so much better. So there was, for me, maybe stupidly, when we took the lead and kicked the ball off to Iowa State, I was like, okay, the defense just needs to do what it's done this whole game. Iowa State has scored two touchdowns, and most of them, outside of the very first drive, have taken quite a bit of time and have not been easy. Really, I guess the first drive in the first quarter and the first quote-unquote drive of the second half, where we blew coverage on the very first play, it was, if we do what we've been doing most of this game, we stand a good chance. I felt I was not completely dejected. I thought we had a good chance. But anything good that the defense was able to do on that drive, we immediately undid by just handing out the free yards. And then we make a stop and force a field goal, and we're going to have 2 minutes to either have to retake the lead, which with Sam and how the pass game has worked on these past couple drives, I felt like at the very least we'd be able to get back into field goal range with Cameron Dicker. And that kid is, like, he's worse if the kick doesn't matter. If the kick matters, he is way more reliable. So I had absolute confidence that didn't matter what happened with that field goal, we were going to win the game. And then we have the just most baffling play to get offsides on a field goal attempt where the kicker is not even reliable for Iowa State. I mean, if you watch his practice kick that got called off because of the field goal, or got called off because of the offsides, that dude shanked it. He missed. So at the absolute least, we're going to be able to take another, with 2 minutes, we're going to be able to take nearly the full 2 minutes off the clock and punt it back to them and force them to basically chuck a Hail Mary to end the game. Or they make the field goal and Sam has 2 minutes, admittedly no timeouts, but 2 minutes to drive down the field, get us into field goal range, and let Cameron Dicker do Cameron Dicker things. So if you're the special teams coordinator thinking about all this, you have to be like preaching to these guys, like, we don't need a block right now. We have time. It's not 3 seconds to go. We don't desperately need to do whatever we can to prevent this from going through. We have time to recover. So why we're going all out, like, really, those guys should have just stood up, like, not even crossed the line of scrimmage at any point, and really just played safe to make sure that they didn't try and do something sneaky and score a touchdown instead of just kicking a field goal. So there was no reason for us to be pushing like that, and it's just the long list of what the fuck are we doing on special teams outside of our actual individual specialists that has plagued us again all season, whether that's Derek Wareheim, whether that's Casey Horney, whether that's whoever else is involved with our special teams unit. It's just that kind of mental mistake that has been the calling card for everyone not named Cameron Dicker or apparently Chris Nagar lately for this entire special teams unit all year.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. I feel like I'm saying that a lot, but we're just agreeing on all these points. And really, again, this goes back to they will have to make changes in the offseason. But really, I think the most disappointing part about this is that, A, we've shut the door on another 10-win season, probably. And B, God, we're wasting Sam Ehlinger. We're wasting Devin Duvernay and his poor performances this year. We're kind of wasting the cumulatively good performance that the D-line has had all year long. And I don't know how those players will feel about this going forward. There's going to be some level of animosity. Like, man, I put up how many yards and how many touchdowns, and we didn't do shit.
Yeah, really the only saving grace here is, I mean, it's exceedingly clear the allegiance that Sam Ehlinger has to the University of Texas. So he's not a guy where I'm worried that he's going to be frustrated and have that affect his play on the field. He's going to use that as fuel to help him. But, I mean, it's absolutely true. We're wasting a junior season from a guy that at this point, I think you could make an extremely strong argument that he is the number three greatest quarterback in the history of the University of Texas football team.
No doubt.
Vince Young, Colt McCoy. And if it's not Sam Ehlinger, I'd love to hear your argument for who it is. Because, I mean, obviously a guy who bleeds burnt orange is finally the stability that we have been looking for since Colt McCoy left. And we are squandering it. If we go through next year not winning a Big 12 title with Sam Ehlinger after the three seasons that he'll have put together, sophomore, junior, senior campaigns, I don't know if I could call it a fireable offense, but it might be one of the worst offenses that I could possibly imagine that would not get you fired. To have that great a quarterback and have a Sugar Bowl trophy be the only thing you have to show for it.
To be fair, that's a pretty nice trophy, but when you surround it with all the context, yeah, it just seems like the outlier. I think, who is it? Zach Barnett from the Football Scoop had a great point about that, where he was just saying that Texas beating Georgia, Texas beating Oklahoma in 2018 might have just been the outliers on what is pretty much an average team that also makes Herman just an average coach at the Power 5 level. And we may have to brace for that possibility, even though he has all the resources, all the tools, all the recruits. It just he hasn't put it together, ultimately. And we know that, you know, having a breakthrough is one thing, but maintaining it is a whole different beast. And ultimately, coaches can falter really badly at that second step. And we've never seen Herman have to maintain a team before. So now we're seeing him have to adapt to learn on the job. Again, this is his fifth year, but he's never stayed at a spot this long. So again, we're having to go through these growing pains. And I just don't know when it will turn.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to expect. It's something that we've talked about on here. I know Will Baser brought it up in conversations that we've had over the years, where the reality is, with Tom Herman being as green as he was coming from Houston, only having been there for 2 years, he's going to have to learn on the job. He's going to have to grow as a coach while on the job, which generally, when you're a blue blood school, you're not looking to hire a guy who is going to learn on the job. And that's part of the problem that we have is we have a coach who's not truly proven yet. I mean, you'd ideally be doing like not a blue blood, but Florida goes after Dan Mullen after several years at Mississippi State, proving that he can build and maintain his program. That's who Florida turns to. In the case of Alabama, going after Nick Saban after a successful campaign at LSU and then that little bit of time in the NFL. That's sort of the target that you're looking to set, is a guy who's not learning on the job. And that's the area that we've decided to attack, or that the route that we decided to take with hiring Tom Herman is saying, look, we're going to give you all of these things. We believe that you can be this coach, but maybe there is an aspect to that where fans are expecting an immediate turnaround, thinking that he's a finished product type of guy. He's I mean, I remember talking to you about it when we hired him. He's the most, you called him one of the biggest prospects as a coach since Urban Meyer. And by the time Urban Meyer got to Ohio State, he'd obviously accomplished a lot. Even when he got to Florida, he had done a ton as a head coach at Bowling Green, at Utah. He had several years of experience. We just, with the way college football is now, we're having to take that leap of taking a guy who doesn't have more than half a decade of experience as a head coach. So as much as we want him to be great right away, maybe there is just a lot of growth that he needs to take in order to reach that point. And I think that step this year, quite obviously, has to be his ability to let go of non-contributors on this team, on the coaching staff, whether that's game day coaching, practice coaching, film review, recruiting, whatever it is. He needs to prove that he is capable of being that coach who is able to identify the problem on the staff, remove that problem, and then replace with someone who is better suited for this staff, where you're able to make it work and not just stick to the whole alignment buzzword that you've had since you got here, but really challenge yourself to have guys to bring in maybe a difference of opinion that can be good. Like, I can understand wanting a unified vision moving forward, but you can have conflicting voices in a meeting room be helpful, be far more helpful with that, I wouldn't call it conflict, but just that difference of opinion there can change so many things. And that's the step that Tom Herman needs to take, is he needs to move outside that comfort zone, prove he can operate outside his comfort zone a little bit, and take that next step in growing as a head coach. Otherwise, I mean, we're seriously talking about him not being around past 2020.
Yeah, and I just want to add one thing. You mentioned alignment and all that, and teams like Alabama hiring, proven coaches. That isn't such a commodity anymore. I really believe, and this may sound cheesy, but it does go back to alignment. It's not alignment that's coming from the head coach. And I certainly don't mean like coach speak where they say it, you know, just to get it out there. Like this stuff, it starts from the very top, the university and the athletic department, right? Like if you look at Oklahoma, Ohio State, these teams, they hired a completely unproven guy, but it didn't matter because that guy, whoever it was, fit their program culture, fit and aligned, and also hired other coaches who fit that program's culture. And ultimately, that's the way forward, I think. Because even if you look at Clemson, LSU, Washington, they hired coaches that understood the job. They made changes as a result and then reaped the rewards from that, right? So first you have to do is figure out what is that program's culture? What is that program's identity? Emphasize that. And then you have to cultivate it. And then you have to eventually go out onto the field and put out a winning product that kind of combines all those things. Like this may be our biggest disagreement yet. You know, I do think all that stuff matters, but it can't come from the head coach. It has to come from the very top. And we do have to remember the context that when Herman was hired, he wasn't hired by a guy with a plan. We basically had Perrin as a booster who just went out and said, okay, you know, who do you guys want to hire? Herman, okay, yeah, sure, let's make this happen. And that was the decision-making process. I don't think there was much beyond that. And obviously this is becoming a huge rant about coaching styles and what needs to happen during a coaching search. But I really think these are the things that are important, especially in the wake of stuff that's happening at LSU, at Clemson now, where really that identity that the program had is being cultivated, is being emphasized, and they're reaping the rewards as a result.
Yeah, I think with all this, with talking about those guys fitting the culture, I think really the closest we can come to sort of drawing a similar line between the trajectory of a staff. A lot of people like to look back and talk about year two or year three is where a good coach really makes his imprint, where everything really takes hold. And if you don't accomplish stuff there, You're not going to ever accomplish it. So really, the closest with how green Tom Herman is as a head coach, you have to look to other instances of successful programs where the coach that they hired did not have a wealth of experience. So you're not able to look at Washington with Chris Peterson, who had like a decade at Boise State of being head coach. You can't look at Dan Mullen. You can't look at Urban Meyer at Ohio State. You can't look at Nick Saban in Alabama. And honestly, I wouldn't say you could look at Ryan Day or Lincoln Riley, just given that they were in this sort of pre-made situation where they just sort of had to ascend and maintain to a certain degree when following one of the greatest coaches of all time in each of those positions. So you got to look to someone who did come in as part of an overhaul. And the best example of that right now is Dabo Swinney at Clemson. Year three Clemson under Dabo Swinney goes 7-6, and he overhauls the staff. He brings in Chad Morris, a high school coach from the state of Texas, to install an over-the-top new offense, a whole pick up the pace, spread them out, evolve the offense. That's the kind of undertaking that we're looking at needing to make here, is we need to be able to tear up the floorboards on this coaching staff for a lot of it. Herman needs to be willing to do that. And Dabo Swinney has shown that you can grow into that role and prove to be an extremely good coach. So I'm not going to jump off the bandwagon here, and I'm going to blindly hold on to hope, because if I'm not doing that, then why am I watching any of these games? But that's the model we need to follow. We need to hope that we're able to execute that type of turnover and pull in a staff that challenges a little bit of what we've known, sort of the status quo of this staff, and like hope that Herman truly can evolve and grow as a head coach in the same way that Dabo Swinney has while head coach at Clemson, after coming from being just the wide receiver coach. He wasn't even a coordinator when he got hired as the head coach at Clemson. So, I mean, that's the only thing I can really hold on to that gives me any hope that that type of change is possible.
Exactly. Oh, so yeah, we have another game next week?
Ah, shit, all of this ranting, I almost forgot. Yeah, what, in retrospect, I mean, if we had just sort of held up our end of the bargain, this is another game that legitimately could have been a full-on ranked matchup. Not that anyone was expecting that at the start of the year. No one was expecting Baylor to be 9-1 at this point in the season. Yeah. But, I mean, this is going to turn out to be a really big game. And this is one where, just with how weirdly inconsistent we've been, like, I feel like no result in this game would surprise me. Like, if Baylor, I mean, yeah, maybe the only thing, just given the history of Tom Herman's Texas, is that we don't get blown out. Getting blown out by Baylor would be the only thing that would surprise me. But
pretty much,
I wouldn't be surprised to lose this in heartbreaking fashion in the last second. I wouldn't be surprised to see another Oklahoma game where it feels like we got blown out, but we only lose by a possession, even though it felt like we were never really competitive. Wouldn't surprise me to see us win in upset fashion on a last second field goal. It wouldn't surprise me to see us come out and physically dominate Baylor out of nowhere and win by two or three scores. So it's just sort of another one of these games where with this team, you just sort of throw up your arms and go, well, guess we'll see on Saturday what happens.
Yeah, pretty much. And Baylor's played some ugly football at times. They have the same inconsistency issues that we do, except theirs stem from not having the depth that a lot of these other elite teams do have. And they do, I would say that that's going to be the biggest thing in our favor, is that they're extremely inconsistent. But on the other side, we're just as inconsistent as them. We have the talent, once again. It's going to be how much of that will actually travel and how much of that will actually be utilized well. As for Baylor, they already know what to do against Texas, because every other team has shown a blueprint, followed it almost to an exact T, and you have to wonder why we haven't picked up on these strategies that other teams are employing. And it's the same thing for Texas. We know how Baylor can be beaten, and it's going to take a level of focus that we haven't seen this season from the team to put it together.
Yeah, and that level of focus being on both sides of the ball. I think
well, let's shown, not forget all three sides. Let's not forget special teams.
I mean, we've won games where the special teams was not doing us any favors. We saw what happens in the Oklahoma State game, and I think that Oklahoma State game and probably these last 2 weeks have been the most focused that this defense has ever been. So we can only hope that the level of focus we get from the offense is the offense that we saw against and through really through the first 3 weeks, especially against LSU. Well, I guess really the first 4 weeks, because it felt like we moved the ball pretty much at will against Oklahoma State. We're going to need that offense because this will be basically the fifth game or the fourth game in a row where we're playing one of the top defenses in the conference. We've had Kansas State. We've had TCU. We've had Iowa State. Now Baylor. Those are four of the top probably five or six defenses in the conference. So we're basically all at once playing the top half of the conference for defense. So we need the offense to be able to execute at a high level in order to beat that level of defense. And I think that's one thing that's made it really difficult to swallow for a lot of Texas fans is there's still a lot of Texas fans who are in this mindset of, oh, we're good. It's just gonna, they came into this year thinking, oh, we're gonna be good. It's gonna be like the late 2000s where we basically walk in, doesn't matter what hype we heard about the opponent, we're just going to absolutely run roughshod over their defense no matter what. That's just not reality anymore. These defenses that we're going up against are extremely good at defending the type of offense that we like to run. So we need to be prepared for a good offensive performance to not be 45 points, but maybe 30 points, maybe 28 points. And we need the defense, as Tom Herman has used, really seems like has been the buzzword for 2019, we need to play complementary football. We need the defense to show up the way it has the past couple weeks, not be the defense that showed up against TCU and made whatever the name of their quarterback. Who was the quarterback for TCU?
Max Duggan.
We don't need Charlie Brewer to get the Max Duggan treatment, where he spent all year kind of scrapping along and not really wowing anybody. We don't need to make him look like a Heisman contender. We need to be able to do Brock Purdy had a big game against us, but we need to do stuff like slow down Skylar Thompson a little bit, not allow this guy to have a career day like we've seen from so many quarterbacks against us this season. So if we can do enough to not let Charlie Brewer look like a Heisman winner, I think this is a winnable game. But like I said, it's also with what Baylor's capable of on both sides of the ball, given Charlie Brewer can play at a high level, we've seen that, and given the weapons that they do have on offense, especially in Denzel Mims at wide receiver, this is one where it feels like it basically boils down to the mindset that Texas comes out to play with. If they're coming out ready to fight, this is a game we can definitely win. If they are not fully in mentally, it's a game that we will absolutely lose.
Yeah, pretty much exactly. Again, no slow starts. You have to contain Brewer, and you have to contain their run game. And I don't think it's too much of a stretch that the goal should be holding Baylor under 20. And all these things are possible. Don't get me wrong. They're all on the table. They just have to go out and execute. And they can't have any lapses like they've allowed the last couple weeks with these big passing plays where everybody just forgets to cover some guy and then forgets to tackle him either. So again, it's consistency and focus and no more slow starts.
Yeah, it's really that simple. Is everyone needs to be ready to go right from the start. We cannot afford to keep playing this game where we play catch up from basically the drop of the hat, where we immediately put ourselves behind by one or two touchdowns and then are just scrapping and fighting for every little point that we can get and try and drag ourselves back into it. We need to be able to jump out. I'd like to see the offense be like, hopefully we can win the toss and get the offense on the field first, because I'd like to see us take the lead right from the start and then play from there. I really do not want to play this game where we go down 7 points first drive, get absolutely walked all over and aren't able to ever really feel in control of the game like it's felt for the past several weeks. So just come out focused. Don't give up those easy plays to start. Settle in and go from there.
So then what's your score prediction?
Like I said, really, I sort of deliberated a bit on this just because I am sort of back and forth. I as much as the defense has improved, the pass defense is still extremely weak. I mean, we saw Brock Purdy, while not technically a career day, 350 yards is still a big day, obviously. I expect Charlie Brewer is going to have a big day because that's just the calling card for the 2019 defense, is making other quarterbacks look really good, even if they're not. So I expect Charlie Brewer is going to have a good day, probably two, maybe three passing touchdowns, probably in the neighborhood of 300 yards passing again. So, I mean, obviously I want us to win, but I just don't feel like the mentality of the team is going to be there, and it seems like there's a lot of uncertainty within the coaching staff and with the players that we've heard about so far in the wake of this Iowa State game, just feeling dejected, sort of down on themselves for how this season has gone. So I've got Baylor winning 34-28. Another one-score game. I haven't decided if that's going to be something where we make it look like it's a one-score game at the end with a late score, or if that's Baylor has a late drive to take the lead. I don't know. But yeah, I'm saying one possession loss.
Yeah, same. I have Baylor winning 27-24. I think it'll be Baylor goes off to a hard start. Texas is stunned initially, then eventually claws back, but it's just too little too late. And yeah.
Hopefully we're both wrong, but it's one of those, I think a lot of Texas fans are hearing our score prediction, probably rolling their eyes thinking that we're going to get blown out, like we're going to get dragged by Baylor, just because that's the level of dejected that this fan base has hit with how this recent stretch of games, basically since the first bye week, has gone. Fan confidence has tanked, and I mean, it's completely fair to expect fan confidence to tank when so many of these sort of promises that have been built up in the offseason haven't really come to fruition. So hopefully we can figure it out, but thank you for sticking with us during what has really turned out to be a pretty damn disappointing season. But there are still games upcoming, still games to look forward to, and still hopes and dreams for this coaching staff to crush. So we still have the opportunity to ruin Baylor's season and make some corrections of our own to get us back on track to hopefully be competitive the way we expected to be this year in 2020. So make sure you follow us on Twitter at the FTH Podcast and subscribe to the Hornscast Network on the podcast listening platform of your choice. That'll keep you up to date with everything we do. Do a lot of shit posting, or in the case of Noah today, not shit posting, actually doing something productive and comparing rushing stats based on how many times the opposing coaching staff had seen us. So yeah, keep up to date. We got a lot of good stuff going on there, even if the team doesn't have a lot of good stuff going on. But until next week, hook 'em.
Okay.